Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I'm Ryan Shukin here with Todd Embley.
That's me.
And we had a surprise for Todd.
You're an asshole.
Yeah, we had an amazing surprise.
It was like freaking podcast Christmas Day over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. And it's our guest, Remington Ong, is one of my past co-founders of the startup.
One of yours.
The co-founder of Chishima that we were in batch five in China Accelerator.
Yep.
When Todd was first coming, bringing China Accelerator to Shanghai from Dalian, and it was an incredible program, incredible experience, helped launch us into everything we're doing. And Rem is now the...
Of which we have no part of.
Yeah, Remington Ong is now the partner at Fenbushi, which is a blockchain fund in China based in Shanghai.
Yes.
They are a $50 million fund. They are looking at tons and tons of blockchain technologies, how it can revolutionize the world. And he's here telling us incredible things about what blockchain is, how it's different from Bitcoin, which was a lot of knowledge for me.
It is. I mean, I'm going to be interested to see how much information here is actually new for a lot of people. But, I mean, can people differentiate Bitcoin from blockchain? Do a lot of people think one and the same? I don't know. But after you listen to this, you will now know the difference and all the potential applications. I think we're really going to open your eyes to how, even a lot of the startups in China or how a lot of the startups globally want to come to China, because 80% of the world's Bitcoin is held in China. So anybody doing blockchain, anything, anywhere is looking to come here. All the manufacturing, everything happens here. Everybody wants to come to China to do blockchain. So Rem, the perfect person to sit here and talk to us about what our startups, what is innovation in blockchain look like here today, because I'm seeing it from all over the globe from my office in Shanghai.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So awesome. I guess without further ado, going to get into it. I hope you enjoy. Okay, everybody, we're here, and we just got to start off by saying Ryan's kind of an asshole.
A little bit.
Ryan's kind of an asshole because he surprised me with today's guest.
It was
totally
surprised.
And it was funny because there was lots of information, going back and forth. Yeah, you did. You totally shrouded this whole thing. There was like no actual name mentioned.
No.
Or you changed a name or something, and it was like, oh, guy, he works for this big blockchain investment firm and all this kind of stuff.
Great episode.
I'm just like, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I'm just mostly ignoring you. And, so we're sitting here, and you were being so weird about it. But you weren't. I was like, something in the back of my mind was tickling me that there was something strange. Anyway, so to get to the point, Mr. Remington Ong is our guest today. And I can give a little bit of background.
I can give
a little bit, because what do I know? I know that you went to INSEAD to do your MBA.
Mm-hmm.
You had a lot of experience in finance.
Mm-hmm.
Which company?
Merrill Lynch.
Yeah, that's why that would be my first guess. I knew it wasn't Goldman. Mm-hmm. So yes, you were at Merrill Lynch. You went to INSEAD. You came up to China.
Mm-hmm.
You are a kind of a crossbreed of a lot of different cultures.
Yeah.
and then in China, you unfortunately met Ryan.
Yes.
Worst day of my life.
Immediately.
I remember that.
The beard drew you in.
Yeah.
And, like, and then you were
beard.
Like, yeah. And then you just kind of got caught up in it, like a dust, a broom. And then you guys decided to start a startup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys decided to do a startup, and of all the places you guys decided to apply, you applied to China Accelerator.
That is true.
And it's great, because we're going to get to know and talk more about Ryan's history.
Yeah.
Because he may have shot himself in the foot here. So you guys did Chishenma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always wanted to call it was the Songza of choosing where you wanted to eat.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. And so we went through, and you guys... it didn't die for anything other than, I think, mostly because it was life circumstance just got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Life, this happens almost like 50% of the time. Things happen in this way. My wife is pregnant and, I need to get a real job. Yeah,
things happen.
You know, things happen. Yeah, and they happen even more so in China. You know, to varying degrees, family members get involved in pressures and things.
Yeah.
You know, you guys killed it, and you were amazing, obviously, to have in the program. But it didn't go too much further after the program.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we know what you did, Ryan. You just
I just stayed around.
You hung around trying to accelerate, like,
grabbed
just
onto
a really,
dear life.
Really, you know, like a bad yeah. smell. You just don't know where it's coming from, and you can't
and
get
I
rid
just
of it.
Stayed
and. And then eventually we're just like, we had to own it and just like, well, if he's not going to leave, let's just make him go to work.
Yeah.
So, you know, now he works for us. But then this guy who's been kind of off the radar, at least my radar for quite a while, popped in. And now I've seen you once, maybe twice over the last couple of years.
Yep.
And then Ryan, who apparently has been in touch, surprises me today. And you walk in the door and here we are talking about how you are, you know, a managing partner or something at a $50 million fund that does blockchain investment.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So Ryan's an ass, but I'm going to leverage
and you
this
should
opportunity
have seen,
to talk about Ryan's past.
Yeah. You should have seen Todd's jaw drop and how happy he actually got.
Yeah. I haven't it sounded so happy. I'm just prepping.
Yeah. No, it was good.
But it was awesome because we had such a good time. And I'm sorry, listeners. This makes me a little nostalgic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I had just brought China Accelerator to Shanghai. You guys were in my first batch, my first cohort, where, you know, shit was going crazy.
Oh, it was.
I mean, I showed up in Shanghai with, like I said, I tell people I have like a wooden crate full of like some monitors and office supplies and a server and stuff like this. And there's me in a backpack in a big empty room because we didn't even have desks or chairs when I got here.
Yeah.
They were still being made because we were in a new co-working space and I was hijacking their event space for 3 months to run the program. Mm-hmm. And here I am just, you know, me and
oh,
a
God,
crate.
The chairs, man.
Yeah. Awful.
Oh, wow.
In this new co-working space place. And then, you know, I had to go to work. And so doing the whole thing and met you guys and you told me about Chishima and I thought, you know, this is really great. And you guys are both big foodies and great backgrounds and you both speak Chinese and the whole thing. And it was like, awesome. Like this is going to be amazing. But you guys were super fun and great to have in the program. You were a big heart and soul pillar of that batch five. So, you know, it's amazing. And here we are full circle sitting in the same room again.
Yeah.
So amazing. Thanks for the surprise. I appreciate it.
There you go.
All right. Yeah. Well, ask him something because it's a podcast.
Yeah, I know.
We should do stuff like that.
Yeah. So blockchain. We had Bobby Lee come on before, talk about Bitcoin, talk about China.
Yeah, Bobby Lee from BTCC.
Yeah. BTCC. Yeah. And we had
our currently most listened to podcast, actually.
Yeah.
For listeners that don't know the stats, we do. Still our number one podcast listened to out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Rem. Pressure's on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we didn't talk a lot about the blockchain opportunities that are still growing and what is happening internationally and where the money is coming from and going towards this.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So,
And so it's interesting because when I go to conferences and they're always a fintech panel because there's got to be a fucking fintech panel at every goddamn conference ever.
Mm-hmm.
So and then they always ask, oh, what's the future of fintech? You know, the moderator who's a fucking genius asks, you know, this panel of really smart people. So what's the future of fintech? And they all go around every single one. The first person will say, well, you know, I'm going to say it's probably blockchain, you know, not Bitcoin in particular, I don't want to do that, but I'm definitely going to say blockchain, you know, and then the next person says, you know, I got to agree with what that guy said. And then, I also agree. I really think, you know, it's going to be a blockchain, you know, and then the last guy said, you know, not Bitcoin, but maybe blockchain, you know, that's the go. And then it's over. So it's been the most useless ending to every fintech panel I've ever seen. Tell me more.
Yeah.
Tell
what
me
are they
more
saying?
About this. I
explain
need more.
Explain it. And how are you choosing and investing? And what does that look like?
All right. So the quick and dirty intro of what blockchain is blockchain is basically the engine behind Bitcoin. It's the database, the technology that makes Bitcoin work. And if you guys have talked to Bobby, if you guys had some background about Bitcoin, you know that Bitcoin is one of the first ways that you can actually securely transfer things of value across the internet.
Mm-hmm.
The internet's been around for a while. You've had online banking, things like that, but all of those were centralized systems. What Bitcoin allows out when Bitcoin was first founded was that you could create something that can store a value that you can securely transmit from one person directly to another without going through a necessarily a central authority. Mm-hmm. And that particular transaction is immutable. It's on the record forever. So you can't reverse it. Everybody can verify the transactions. It's actually a very safe and secure
previous owners.
Previous owners, you can track the whole life cycle of the Bitcoin and so forth. The way Bitcoin is able to achieve that is that it uses basically a database kind of protocol known as the blockchain, in which it packages. So the way Bitcoin actually works is that it actually records every single transaction ever done on the network from the very beginning, from the first transaction all the way up till now. So what it does is, let's say you take 100 transactions. You have a bunch of computers that actually confirms the transactions, packages it into something called a block. So you've got a block of, say, 100, 1,000 transactions. And then the next 100 transactions that comes up, you package it together again, and then you link it back to the first. The third one comes up, you link it back to the second. And basically, over time, what you have is this chain of blocks that has the records of every single transaction that has ever been done on the network. So that's actually kind of how, very simple way to explain how Bitcoin kind of works. It's really just a database, a ledger of every single transaction that has happened from one person to another over the course of time.
So when people say, I'm going to use blockchain technology, they're saying, I'm going to leverage that capability, that function, yep, into a new idea.
Yeah. The Bitcoin network actually started in 2009 after Satoshi famously published his paper in late 2008. And at the very beginning, for the first few years, it was actually mainly sort of geeks and nerds and cryptographers that were kind of playing around with it. And that was the point when Bitcoin was worth like cents and less than a penny, right?
Yeah.
And then it was around 2012 or so, that late 2012, that people started realizing that, hey, you know what we can do with Bitcoin? What we can do is we can actually transmit money across borders. Because in the past, when you wanted to send money from one country to another, say from China to the US, you needed to go to the bank, fill out a bunch of forms, and then go through the SWIFT network, and actually takes like at least a week for the money to be able to get there.
At least.
And then right around that time, people started realizing that, hey, if I want to send money from, say, China to the US, what I can do is I can buy some Bitcoin in China, I can sell some Bitcoin, I can then directly sell that Bitcoin in the US, and that gets transferred into US dollars into my bank account.
Yeah, it's like lawless currency.
Well, don't think of it as a currency, but think of it as sort of a vehicle that gets your value from point A to point B.
So how are people then converting this into other blockchain ideas? What's an example of maybe a blockchain idea that you've been seeing?
So the biggest trend in blockchain right now, what's actually really exciting about it is that you've got all of the biggest banks in the world are looking at this technology and looking to see how they can revolutionize sort of their traditional banking systems. So when banks, so the reason I was mentioning the history was that by 2013, like before 2013, actually nobody really cared. It was sort of like an outlaw, kind of like a small kind of peanuts play. But then by 2013, you've got a Bitcoin, which used to be worth less than a penny, now suddenly worth $1,000 each.
Yeah,
because people were using it as a way to transfer money from one border to another. So by around 2013, banks started looking at this and they're trying to realize, is this actually going to be currency? Is this going to replace traditional currency? Let's figure out what the heck Bitcoin actually is. And then at that time, banks hired people to research into this, and they realized that, hey, you know what? Actually, Bitcoin itself as a currency is one thing, but what's actually really interesting to us is the blockchain technology underneath. If you sort of break it down into two different levels, blockchain is kind of like the underlying engine, and Bitcoin is one of the potential applications that you could do with it. So what would happen if we disregard Bitcoin as a currency and we use blockchain to transfer value as we have done traditionally? What if we replaced our age-old, like, Swift money transfer, like old systems, and use this technology to transfer money, to transfer value instantly across borders between different banks all at the same time. Yeah. So that was when sort of blockchain kind of separated away from Bitcoin. And by now, you've got all of the world's largest banks. For example, there's an R3 consortium, which comprises of 40, I think it's almost 60 now. It used to be 42 of the world's largest banks. You've got your Morgan Stanley's, Goldman mm-hmm. Sachs, JP Morgan's, Citibank's, all those guys all working together in a consortium to try to figure out a standard in which you could use blockchain technology to transfer value between all the different banks. And mm-hmm. this could be simple bank account transfers. This could be security settlements. This could be like any of the billions of different financial transactions that all these major banks go through. So that's really kind of right now the major direction. The first major direction in blockchain technology is that banks are looking at it to see how you can sort of transfer value.
Yeah, but this was something that banks were terrified of for the longest time. People were talking about how, you know, banks didn't want this, governments didn't want it.
Yes.
But what's the reasoning? I mean, do you have any insight into why people are now pro blockchain? Are they saying it's inevitable, or what's the idea?
Or are the the consortium just did looking into it so that they can protect their ass and not, not go out of business.
So banks have been really anti-technology for a very long time. And
why wouldn't they be?
if you look at the way banks function today, it's the same way that they functioned 50 years ago. The SWIFT system right now has been in place for decades. Banks are just very slow to move. But it's actually a combination of factors, including things like the financial crisis that we had a few years ago, that got banks starting to think, hey, you know what, maybe there are some things that we need to start doing, start changing the way we used to do things. Because the banks actually missed a lot of the technological innovations, including the internet. I mean, online banking to this date still sucks. Mm. You've got like payments, things like in China, I mean, we use Alipay, we use WeChat Pay every single day. These are technologies that have been developed in the private sector by technology companies that banks completely missed the boat on. So after the financial crisis, banks started shuffling some of their management structures, and some of the newer guys came up and started saying that, hey, you know what, we've got the financial crisis has showed that there's we have true risk of failure, that there are certain things that we might need to change to catch up with the future of the world.
Yeah.
So combined with the timing of sort of when Bitcoin and blockchain started sort of gaining some traction, banks kind of latched onto it and they started researching it and they said, hey, you know what? This is actually really interesting. We can get ahead of this. We can actually position ourselves in front of this blockchain revolution.
Enough history. You love Bitcoin and blockchain.
Yep.
Got it. Yep. That's clear.
Mm-hmm.
But what as a fund are you guys doing?
Our office is in China, but we actually We have one office.
Right?
Yes.
And it's in
Shanghai. It's in Lujiazui.
Okay. Shanghai, yeah. Most of our listeners have no idea what that second thing is that you just said.
Yep.
Yeah. South Shanghai.
So it's in the financial center of Shanghai.
Yeah. Okay. You hesitate to say that you are mostly active in China.
Yes. Actually, to date, I'd say that 80% of the companies that we've looked at and that we've invested in are actually outside of China.
What's a typical investment size?
We do mostly seed stage. So most of our investments, 200 to 500K US dollars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the like check size?
Check size, yes.
Okay. So what's that? Like a $2-3 million round? Or did you say US dollar?
US dollar, yes.
Yeah. So
the round itself might be like $1 to $2 million.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But these startups, I mean, they're coming to a fund based in China for a reason. Why do you believe they're coming to you guys, or you're reaching out to them from China?
Yeah, all of mm-hmm. that. How are they finding you? How are you finding them?
So by now, I think everyone kind of recognizes that China is one of the largest markets in the world. So no matter what industry you're in, whether you're in finance, whether you're in supply chain, anything that you want to do that is cross-border, you will need to have some kind of a foothold in China.
Yeah. I mean, fintech disruption in China is just going like gangbusters.
Yes. And I think
80%
that
of the world's Bitcoins held here, something like that. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And even actually, actually regulation-wise, when you're looking at fintech, for example, China counterintuitively actually has one of the best environments for fintech innovation.
Oh, sure.
Because if you look at the P2P sort of loans industry, like China has way surpassed any other country in terms of P2P loans. In terms of
$58 billion compared to $15 billion last year.
Yep. And payments, WeChat payments, like Alipay, things like that.
Yeah. Because of how fucked up the banks are and how there's absolutely no credit system score in place.
And I think just there's not a lot of legacy regulation to hold people
back.
That's
true.
Yeah. Whereas in the US, you've got sort of age-old SEC regulations and banking regulations that date back to the 1900s. That's basically, whereas in China, most of these regulations never existed. So the government kind of takes a stance where they say, you can try it at a small scale. Once you get into a big enough scale for me to care, then let's talk. Then
yeah,
let's
I mean, it's
out.
We had Benjamin Cho on here from Loeb & Loeb, ex-Cooley guy, and one of the things he mentioned was that China did not even have corporate law, did not even exist until, what, 96?
Yeah,
something like that.
Yep.
So,
crazy.
I mean, you know, they're playing catch up in a lot of areas. But hey, that means
but
the opportunity.
Catch up with innovation.
It's
they can bring in these ideas. They don't have to put on the brakes because we've got this banking system done for this many years, and we just got to keep it going.
But that's the thing. I don't think China does catch up. Like, they don't do that.
No,
they go, fuck it, we're going to the front of the line.
You're right.
Something else.
Yes. You're right. Yeah, yeah. You're right.
We can't catch up.
Yes.
We're too far behind, and there's too many of us.
We're building something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just gonna take a shortcut over to the front of the line on this thing over here, and then we'll just make that the leader. You know,
because
like email. Fuck it, we're so far behind in email. Let's just go to messaging. Fuck it.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys when you get there.
Yeah.
So one thing I kind of want to note here is that blockchain right now, companies that we're looking at, they're not limited to fintech. Actually, blockchain right now is branching out into a lot of different industries.
Yeah.
So for
example,
one of the very interesting industries is actually supply chain and even luxury goods.
What?
So we've, as I mentioned before, one of the benefits of blockchain is that you've got this data which cannot be changed. So every single transaction, every single piece of information that has been put on there has always been there and cannot be changed. Mm-hmm. So one of the really interesting applications that we've seen right now, for example, is we've got startups that are working together with luxury goods manufacturers to put, like, let's say your LV bags or even individual diamonds,
no way.
Record them on the blockchain, sign it to say that this is actually legit, this is real, and then anytime, anywhere around the world, anyone wants to, like, if they buy a secondhand
bag, can verify
they can
part
verify
of the blockchain.
They can verify it's part of the blockchain. Exactly.
Which then verifies its authenticity, where it comes from, everyone in the whole process who's handled it, and it just settles it.
Next up for bid is John Lennon's blockchain. John Lennon did in fact actually own this blockchain at one point in time, and started bidding at $50,000.
Oh my god!
Yep.
That you know what, that is going to happen. Mm-hmm. That is true.
Yeah.
And then even when you're looking at complex supply chain things, like every single there's a lot of talk about how Apple's sort of responsible manufacturing, whether or not they're checking in other suppliers and such. Like right now with the blockchain, one of the things that can be possible is that every single of the thousands of different companies that go into manufacturing parts and components for like a single iPhone, for example, they can record their data. They can record sort of when each piece of component was manufactured, recorded on a blockchain.
Yeah.
And then so by the time you get to the iPhone, when you want to trace back to see which manufacturer did this, which whether or not it was real, whether or not that manufacturer was actually responsibly treating its workers, you can actually trace back with this immutable record.
That's
as well.
That's incredible.
All right. On that note, quick break to thank our sponsors, and then we're going to come back with Remington Ong from, how do you say it? Fembusha Capital.
Hey, everyone. We want to give a shout out to our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one accelerator in the East. They are a mentorship-driven program that takes your ideas from all over the world and helps you make them successful in China. At the same time, we take great ideas from inside China and help them grow all over the world. If you want to find out more, please visit www.chinaaccelerator.com, and batch 10 applications are going to be open soon, so it's a really good opportunity to get in there.
We also want to thank our other sponsor, PeopleSquared. PeopleSquared is the largest and best co-working space across China. They've got 8 or 9 spaces in Shanghai. They've got spaces up in Beijing. They've got spaces down in Shenzhen. They really are the best community of people to be dealing with here. So if you have a startup and you're coming to China, PeopleSquared is your number one choice.
And we'd also like to thank our syndication partner, Technode. They are the number one source for news and information about the startup ecosystem, what's going on inside of China. They also work with TechCrunch and helped publish and syndicate that. So we're really happy to have them on as a syndication partner. You can find out more at technode.com.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We're sitting here with our good friend, old friend, Remington Ong.
Hey.
Remington Ong, and who was Ryan's ex-co-founder of the company Chishenmao back in the day, Batch 5.
And we're talking about everything blockchain right now, Remington.
Yes, let's keep it blockchain. And okay, so you're getting a lot of pitches. You're seeing a lot of pitches. You're sourcing, hunting, looking for awesome companies that are using blockchain technologies to solve the world's problems.
Yep. Let's talk about that.
Let's talk a little bit about it. I mean, I don't know if you have to sign NDAs with some of these things before you actually get to see their pitches or look at anything. So, you know, I'll leave it up to you to talk about and not talk about what you can and cannot.
Yep.
But, you know, I think we want to color this China. So, I mean, there's two aspects to this. What's cool in blockchain right now and what is happening with blockchain in China? So, start with the first one. You've seen a lot of, I mean, since you started, how many pitches have you seen?
We see hundreds a month. So, we started the fund actually in October. So, easily over 1,000 pitches by now.
Jeez Louise. So, there's, I mean, just to give you an idea of competition, of just those that are working on something to do with blockchain as a solution to something.
Yeah, there's.
That's just over 1,000 that.
It's been in a few months.
Rems and his partners at the fund have seen just in the last 6 months.
Yep.
You know, or 7 months. I mean, that's crazy. You don't think you have competition doing you? You think you're all stealth and you think you're all like, you know, unique in your brilliant idea? Yeah, guess what? So if you can talk about what are some of the cool things you can see without blowing up people's ideas that they're currently working on that they think they're, you know, the only ones in the world working on and the opportunities that are generally out there in blockchain.
No, so there's quite a lot of interesting stuff going on. I mean, one of the interesting areas right now is sort of people looking into how blockchain can be tied together with IoT, with the Internet of Things.
Okay.
And actually, there's a lot of China focus on that, given that a lot of the manufacturing IoT, things like that, is coming out of China. So,
is it enhancement? I mean, you know, a lot of people are worried about fake goods, you know, over here. I mean, you know, when it says made in China, how can you be guaranteed that it's, you know, made with quality or versus not?
So fake goods is definitely a very big focus area right now. We've seen quite a few startups trying to tackle that. And one of the startups, for example, a London-based company called Everledger, actually made headlines and won a few competitions by starting a database of diamonds, basically registered diamonds, putting them on the blockchain. And then, you know how, like, actually certified diamonds come with serial numbers and things like that. So you can actually record the transfer of ownership between a diamond. You can verify whether or not this diamond is real or fake, really certified, and so forth. There are other companies that are looking to work with luxury goods. I mean, luxury goods market in China is huge. LV bags and Hermes bags and things like that. So there are companies that are currently working with these luxury manufacturers to figure out how we can sort of verify individual bags to check whether or not it's real.
Yeah. What about just a Gucci blockchain? Just a straight up, I've got a blockchain, it's a Gucci blockchain.
Yes.
Much better than your H&M
than blockchain. Your H&M blockchain. It'd be, I mean, that would sell.
Luxury blockchains.
Luxury blockchains, yes.
Just screw the actual tangible product.
what are you?
So what's the question?
Yeah, what are you guys? What are you investing in? What are you guys putting your money towards?
Ah, even a better question. You can't just be interested in blockchain now that you've had some schooling on pitches and what to look for. What matters to you? You guys invested at early stage.
Yeah, we invested early.
So what are you looking for? What piques your fancy?
We look for teams that have the hustle and that are trying to find really interesting new use cases for blockchain. As a fund, our thesis is we're supporting entrepreneurs who are using blockchain technology to do cool things. And these cool things can range anywhere from, let's say, peer-to-peer payments to even, for example, putting health records on the blockchain.
Yeah, I can see that. Huge health records, very important.
Yep. So one of the things...
Yeah, Yeah. I mean, hospitals, you know, law firms, everything. You know, where people's lives and so, you know, everything that's been at stake there. Yeah.
So this is a really old problem, right? How do you digitize health records? And people have, many, many startups have been trying to tackle this in the US and Europe for many years.
Well, the answer is not PDFs.
One of the key barriers to this becoming mainstream is that everybody in the healthcare ecosystem, from insurance companies to hospitals to pharmaceuticals and so forth, all of them, they don't want to give up their data. They know that data is valuable. So doctors want to keep their own data, hospitals want to keep their own data, and insurance wants to keep their own data and so forth. So that has been one of the barriers to any single party, including Apple Health, including anyone else, trying to sort of gather your patient information all into one place. But what the blockchain is able to do, actually, is that it is able to create a central database where we don't need to share data with each other. If I'm an insurance company, you're a hospital, I don't need to give you all of the insurance claims and all of the health history of this patient in the past. All we have right now is that through the blockchain, we can have an API which we can mutually verify each other's records. So it's kind of, think of it as a credit check for healthcare. So when I submit a credit check, I'm not actually getting sort of the full banking history of a person. I'm just getting Experian or Transamerica or someone to say, okay, this guy checks out, his score is so and so. So what the blockchain is able to do is that it is able to actually, you can interface directly between all these different players, get the data that you need for your insurance claim or for your hospital check or whatever, but without necessarily giving up that data. So this is actually quite interesting for all these large companies as well. They can achieve what they want without necessarily giving up what they feel is valuable to them.
Very interesting.
And how are these companies coming to you with a China pitch or a China aspect of what they're trying to solve?
Are they doing that?
Yes, very much so. A lot of companies, they approach us because they know that we are underground in China. We can help them get underground in China.
Okay. Interesting.
Because one of the key features that blockchain solves is a lot of cross-border things. Anything that has to do with cross-border, transferring money, transferring value, owning securities, owning property and so forth. That's one of the big things that the blockchain is able to solve. And naturally, China is one of the largest markets in any of these industries.
Well, they're acquiring wealth like nobody's business right now. And they want to move. They have all these ideas. Mm-hmm. So that totally makes sense. And when you break down, when you just say it's not about money, it's about value.
Yes.
Verified value.
Yep.
Then that opens the door for a lot of ideas and a lot of opportunities.
So I'll give you one example. For example, like one of the small countries, I think it's Isle of Man, has started a trial to put property registrations, real estate registrations on the blockchain. This is a government-sponsored project where the government is trying to see if it makes sense to put all of our sort of property ownership onto the blockchain.
Yeah.
And if you put it onto the blockchain, what you can eventually do is you can be able to sort of buy and sell property. And not even the whole property. Think of it like a timeshare. Like if I can, say, buy a nice beachfront house in some beautiful island somewhere, but I don't have to buy the full thing. I can buy 1/5 of it. I can buy like 1 week out of a year of it. And what the blockchain does is it can actually allow this record, which the government can sign off on and say that, okay, this property is legally owned by 52 different people and not by one person. Each of you can actually own a piece of this property. You can buy it and sell it wherever. All of these ownership records get updated in real time.
Yeah.
And then if I own a week of this property, then I can actually
use it. Super liquid, super transferable.
Super liquid, super transferable. I can use it just like a timeshare.
It's the future.
And is there going to be a need for special blockchain law?
Yes.
No, Ryan. It's totally fine.
No, man. I don't worry about it. Back on Tuesday.
Don't worry.
So one level above, one of the things that blockchain enables is something called smart contracts. Which, if you have...
He says with an eyebrow raise.
Yeah. Smart.
Smart contracts.
So essentially, if you have like your property or whatever on the blockchain, you can actually code individual contracts which do certain things when certain conditions are met.
Into the blockchain?
Yes, you can actually code these smart contracts into the blockchain. So let's say one of the cool applications that people are talking about, for example, is let's say you have a kind of Airbnb for cars, like shared ownership in cars.
Okay.
So let's say I create a smart contract for this car that says if I send you $10, then I can use this car for an hour. Mm-hmm. And then that contract is just there. It's set in stone. So whenever I send $10, it will actually send authorize my phone to use this car for like an hour. Mm-hmm. So if I walk up to the car with my phone, the car will actually unlock, and then I can drive it. And then an hour later, with GPS tracking and everything, an hour like after 1 hour, if what I paid is up, if the money I paid is used up, then the car will just stop.
That's going to be
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, but you would be in overcharge or whatever.
I mean, it's a lot more complicated than that. You're not going to stop right in the middle of a highway. But for example, it can actually, like with self-driving, integrating this with self-driving cars and things like that, it can actually help you safely pull over to the side and say, okay, you're not going to keep moving until you pay more money, for example.
Yeah, or just roll over in a contract to keep on paying more, however you are. Yeah, exactly. And that's, the part that I was curious about was the ability to how much depth can you get into a blockchain? How much data or supplementary data of the transaction can I actually fit into that blockchain? Is there a limit?
So the recording data on the blockchain is actually fairly expensive. So the way blockchain actually works is that because you can actually record a few bytes of data into it, but then every single but if you want to record everything word for word into there, it's actually I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but it's quite expensive to record the whole data. But what people are doing to use to verify records is they can record a hash value of the data into the blockchain, because like a PDF file can be like a 30 gigabyte movie or something. Like it will actually come, you can actually use a hash function to create a unique code that attributes directly to this file. And that hash value is actually a very small piece of data. So when we say people are recording data on a blockchain, they're not actually recording the whole 30 gigabyte file. They're recording sort of a 16 letter, 32 letter hash.
So you can really do almost anything in terms of the information you can place into a Bitcoin, into that contract.
Yes.
So I could send Todd a few Bitcoin, or not Bitcoin, blockchain, in some kind of blockchain deal. I can send Todd something, and then I can also record 4 amazing hugs. And then anyone in the world forever who uses that blockchain will know at one point it was sent to Todd for an amazing hug.
Yes.
I'm not talking. Talking to either of you guys. You're on blockchain hugs.
No, I'm just trying to work it out. Just trying to work it out.
Yeah, so, your own unique way.
So do you guys have any competition in China in the blockchain investing world right now? Is it so hot, or are you guys the leaders?
Yeah, there are a lot of funds that are looking into the blockchain right now. I wouldn't necessarily call them competition. We work a lot with other investors.
There's a saturation point, right? I mean, you want to have enough investors in the space, which then draws enough entrepreneurs who are eager to get that money to be creating and innovating in the space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but then there's, you know, you don't want to tip the saturation point there where then it becomes, you know, too many investors and not enough startups. Mm-hmm. But
so let me put it this way. There's a lot of money from different funds that can be invested into blockchain companies. But one of the advantages of sort of working with a fund like us is that we have a network of all our different portfolio companies where actually, I mean, there's a lot of potential synergies that can make sense with some of these companies working together. So if you want
I mean, it's the network effect.
It's the network effect, exactly.
Totally. And I mean, you know, not only is it the learned and the intelligence that you guys have, and as you continue to be active in this one vertical.
Yep.
You're just going to gain extra layers and layers and layers of knowledge and expertise and network. And the whole network effect just starts to take place.
Yep.
You know, I know that we've been kind of slowly doing that with China Accelerator a little bit. I was seeing how, you know, we're now actively looking for, you know, the pieces, you know, and the elements that we can start patching together to make bigger and bigger molecule of China Accelerator, because, you know, we have a little piece that fits here. It's like, okay, well, we have this great platform that helps you access and find the perfect KOL. Oh, you are data, you know, you're a daily content creation platform. Okay, that's going to work perfect. So yeah, we'll fit you in there. And then we want to look for this. And then we're like, you know, well, we have some Bitcoin stuff down here. Let's put you down over here.
Mm-hmm.
That all, you know, that network effect really goes well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in that sense, we are the biggest one in terms of sort of in terms of this network effect.
Awesome. Yeah.
Quick question: how many big blockchain startups have kind of seen exits, or is this so new that we haven't had that happen yet?
It's quite new.
Yeah. So, I can't think of one.
Or there are a couple
blockchain
companies
outside of Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Blockchain non-Bitcoin.
So blockchain non-Bitcoin is really still in its sort of series A kind of stage.
Wow.
We've seen some Bitcoin companies like Coinbase and Circle Internet Financial that are sort of onto kind of series C, sort of larger stages, but haven't really fully exited yet.
True.
But some of the Bitcoin companies are getting to that stage. Blockchain non-Bitcoin blockchain is still much earlier than that.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's amazing. What are you seeing from the locals as far as you know, their activity in blockchain? I mean, are local startups in droves going to blockchain to do innovation, or is it still kind of a bit of a tiptoe?
So one of the things about China is that there's actually a lot of blockchain talents. As you mentioned, sort of most of the Bitcoin miners and Bitcoin exchanges.
Let's come back to continue with that. But what does blockchain talent look like? I got to ask, what does that even look like? People who have experience in banking, or they're just hardcore coders. What does blockchain talent look like? If I were to pass it on the street, how would I recognize it?
Well, hardcore coders.
Yeah.
Coders that recognize how to use blockchain,
data science knowledge or
cryptography.
Cryptography. Okay.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Continue.
So there's actually a very decent pool of those in China, because China is the largest center for Bitcoin miners, Bitcoin exchanges. Most of the Bitcoin is actually coming in and out of China.
Yep. So by default, you're going to have an amazing, you know, crunch base of cryptographers.
Yep. But that said, most of their focus has been on Bitcoin because it's been so profitable for the past few years.
Sure, yeah.
So we're only starting to see some of them branch out now over the past 6 months or so. To get into blockchain startups, and that's going, we expect that will accelerate over the next year. Mm-hmm. But it's blockchain in China in terms of startups is still very early.
Okay, what about VCs doing blockchain?
Mm-hmm.
How prevalent is that? Are those? I mean, we talked a little bit about competition, but do you see a lot of other VCs in the space yet?
There are a handful of blockchain-specific VCs. I mean, you get a new one being announced every month. Yeah. There are a couple others in China. But there's a broader set of sort of more general kind of TMT VCs that are actually working quite closely with us and talking to us to sort of try to make some blockchain investments as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, fintech investors,
yes,
you would think would be the first ones to maybe pull in a partner or two who understands blockchain to maybe start adding to that divestment of portfolio.
Yep.
But I don't know how many people, I mean, okay, you said there's a lot of cryptographers, you know, here, but how many actually, you know, how many VCs as fund managers could there be in China that actually understand this technology the same way as the entrepreneurs do? I just don't expect you're going to have that many people at the higher levels who understand investing, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a combination of domain knowledge and understanding the finance and investing part of the business, and merging those two makes a nice VC with a network, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how many of those can there really be in VC, given how new blockchain is? Is this a lot of dumb money?
No, I don't think so. I think that if you're talking about VCs that are really like know the details, the ins and outs of the technology, I'd say there's less than a dozen of them. Mm-hmm. But that's not necessarily a VC's job. A VC's job is to sort of see what is the market for this product, how does this fit in other industries, does this kind of trend kind of make sense? And if that's the case, there's actually a lot of VCs that understand the potential impact on that that blockchain can have in various different industries.
That was a very smart sentence. Yeah. That was very good. Yeah,
it was excellent. Well done.
Yeah, awesome. Okay,
I have the question to try to wrap things question up du real jour. Quick.
Yeah.
So I am really excited about this blockchain. Actually, just talking to you, learning about the things that we could do with it has kind of opened my perspective, mm-hmm. and it's gotten me to think. Let's imagine a future where blockchain is a part of our lives.
Yep.
How much can blockchain truly affect us? Mm-hmm. Could blockchain get to the point where it affects our behavior? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if every single Starbucks that I buy mm-hmm. is recorded on a blockchain that mm-hmm. I can then go back and check, mm-hmm. will I start changing my behavior based on a calorie intake blockchain or a health maintenance blockchain or just thinking of all the different ways that it could affect me. Do you envision a future where blockchain is actually helping shape and change the behavior of humanity as we know it?
Absolutely. I think that blockchain itself is something that fits very well into the background of what you do. It's a protocol, just like HTTP is a protocol. Now, everybody on the street right now, they don't, like, if you pick a random guy off the street, no one's going to know what HTTP actually is. But it's affecting their day-to-day behavior because this allows them to view information on their phone, to watch YouTube videos, to post on Facebook, and so forth. In the same way, I think that 10 years from now, like, the average person will still not really know what blockchain is, but it will actually change the way they interact. Like you say, maybe the way I buy coffee, maybe the way I buy goods, maybe the way I invest in financial products. I truly believe that this will actually really fundamentally change the way average consumer behaves on a day-to-day basis.
So you would say the change is inevitable? Quite dependent upon regulatory loosening, adoption, or the result is inevitable. Mm-hmm. The pace and how quickly we get there is the variable.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. All right. You were excellent. Thank you, Rem.
Thank you
very, very much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yeah, and
this is so much fun.
Great surprise, Ryan. Thank you very much.
There we go.
I feel like a very complete person right now. This is awesome. Yeah, Rem, great to see you again. Congrats. I love the new gig. I think it's amazing. I'm so happy for you.
It's perfect for you.
It's really great. And, you know, thank you to everybody on the team who's involved, including Vivian, our producer, and David, our sound producer. Thank you to our sponsors again, China Accelerator, People Squared, our syndication partner, TechNode, and to you, our listener. Thanks very much. We'll see you next time.